on this episode of Ask LA.
But that's also been the fun part of this journey. And I know it's going to continue for years to come. It's just sort of learning all the different ways that landscape architects show up in our environment and their work shows up in ways that we don't even see or recognize. And we have to do a better job of telling that story.
The Ask LA podcast is brought to you by the American Society of Landscape Architects. Produced by the ASLA Emerging Professionals Committee, each episode is geared to provide information and insight into the profession of landscape architecture for students and emerging professionals. On this episode of Ask LA, we have an engaging conversation with the new ASLA CEO, Tory Carter Cunningham, where we get to know him and his plan for preparing ASLA for the future. I'm your host, Daniel Martin. Let's dive in. Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Ask LA podcast brought to you by the Emerging Professionals Committee at the American Society of Landscape Architects. As always, I'm your host, Daniel Martin, and I'm happy to be with you and super excited to have a guest with us today who I think you'll all be happy to hear from. It might be a little different than our normal format, but I think it's a very important person for you guys to know and to understand the perspective and the thoughts and the ideas of where he's coming from. So without further ado, allow me to introduce the brand new Executive Vice President and CEO of the American Society of Landscape Architects, Mr. Tory Carter Cunningham. Tory, welcome. Sorry, I was so focused on the Cunningham that I went with Corey instead of Tory. Oh, that's terrible.
No worries at all. No worries at all. Thank you so much for having me, Daniel. This is fantastic. I'm super, super excited to join you here this morning and talk about ASLA and what it's been like over the last, I guess it's been 4 weeks now since I started.
Mm-hmm. Flying.
Yeah, time is really flying. and no worries. I've been called Corey and Troy, probably since since I was born. So it's all good.
You got that thing where your mom doesn't even get your name right. Yeah, been there.
It's like, all right, you just sort of answer, I've been called uncle's names, and God forbid we're all in the room together, because then every name possible of every grandchild and, all good.
We have a dog. My wife and I had a dog, and the nickname of the dog was Nux. And we have a grandson, and my wife one time said to our grandson, she called him Nux, and he said, "Did you just call me Nux?" He was like 2 years old. So it happens, but I apologize.
No worries at all.
Anyway, we are so happy to have you here. I think students and emerging professionals have a very vested interest in ASLA and where it's going. It's going to be their organization in the future as they age and begin to take leadership positions. And I think a very strong social conscious and an idea of what ASLA should be. And so I think it's good that they're going to hear from you and get a little feel for who's going to be there at the head of the staff position and leading the organization strategically. Mm-hmm. So with that, let's get to know you a little bit. Tell us a little bit, about your background. We just talked about family a little bit. Where did you grow up? What was that life like? Growing up, and let's kind of walk a little bit through that. I'll let you just kind of start.
Sure. Happy to. So I was born in a really, really tiny town called Hertford, North Carolina. And I think when I was probably my early 20s, I looked up, it wasn't Google, I don't know what it was at the time, whatever search engine existed back then. I looked up the population of my town, of that town. This is after I had left. And I think it was 2,500 people, maybe. And so when I say small, I mean small. It's a fair question to ask me how many stop signs or stop signs. So I remember getting our first McDonald's and the whole bit. But I tell you, one of the things about growing up in a small town is there's something special about everybody knowing who you are, and knowing your neighbors. And I mean, it really kind of gets to this sense of community that you know, you hear a lot nowadays that people sort of long and yearn for, even in their associations, they want a community and a kind of, I mean, I know we'll talk a little bit more about that, but it connects directly to what you were saying, that a lot of emerging professionals and young people want out of their association. They want community. They want to feel connected. And so I've sort of, you know, coming from a small town, that's sort of all I knew growing up. And I grew up there until I was 12. My mom and I left when I was 12 and moved to the D.C. metropolitan area.
Okay.
And I remember it being just so different than my little town. I mean, for obvious reasons, right? But it was also, my small town was definitely sort of segregated in many ways. And so when I moved to Maryland, I was exposed to a completely different community, one that was more integrated. And I saw, I saw African Americans who were, you know, middle class, living in the same neighborhoods. And it was great. You know, it was so eye-opening to me, coming from that small, more segregated, community. And, you know, I was basically raised by a single mother and a grandparent, my grandmother. You know, they always instilled in me this sort of, these values that you hear me talk about, repeatedly, over the years. And that is, you know, this sense of community and service. I'll tell you, my grandmother for the longest time told me I was going to be a preacher. I don't know where she got that from, but, you know, I think what she was telling me was that, you know, it was more than just, you know, what I wanted to be when I was younger, which was a lawyer or a doctor, like every other kid, right? but, you know, as I started to grow up and so forth, and she was sort of instilling these values in me, which she was really telling me that it's bigger than you. It's about helping others. It's about being of service to people. And, you know, that is what I've sort of carried forward, from that small town all the way through where we are now today at ASLA. And I know you probably want to know at some point, you know, what drew me to the position and what excited me and so forth. But
yeah,
it all started there. It all started with that sort of longstanding sense of community and service.
Right. So that that kind of feeling of that, is that what took you into this association nonprofit world? I mean, You mentioned being a preacher, and it is sort of like you are the pastor of ASLA, right? You're shepherding the flock. You're bringing us all in, keeping it all going. My dad actually is a pastor, so I get this.
Is he? Really? Oh my gosh! Yeah. So yeah. And tell me again, where are you from, Daniel?
So I grew up down in Mississippi, but I'm in Michigan for about 20 years now or so.
Well, you know a Southern pastor. Oh yeah.
Pentecostal, full deal. Yeah.
Gotcha. Yep. So, you know, I didn't know it at the time, but, you know, looking back, it probably was. I started at associations, my first association when I was 20. And at the time, you know, I mean, quite frankly, at the time, I was like, I need a job. And it was a great opportunity. But as I started to learn what associations do, and how they sort of have this mission, the core mission of their work, it became more and more interesting to me. And what was also fascinating is that you sort of get this really interesting mix of kind of social responsibility and mission work, but also, you know, it's a business, you know, that has to sort of operate and function. And, you know, it's got, you know, there are a team of staff who are professionals who come to work every day, on behalf of the association and the work that on behalf of those members. And so it's this really interesting, really unique type of organization that associations are. And, you know, I cut my teeth, 10 years of that work coming up through the sort of accounting department. I was a little bit of a numbers geek. I worked at this company called ASIS International, for 10 years. and went to school, worked while I went to school. I had this crazy schedule, Daniel, where I would I would basically get up in the morning and go to work for a couple of hours and then drive to the University of Maryland like midday for like, you know, 4 hours of classes, 5 hours of classes, and then drive back to my office in Virginia and work till like 7 or 8 at night. So, you know, just nuts.
No remote learning or working back then.
Yeah, you know, and as you say that, I feel like, oh, I'm really old, because none of that existed back then, right? It was just the beginning of online learning and virtual learning. And, you know, even back then, it was sort of, oh, no, you have to go in person, right? You can't do that. You can't get a real experience through online learning. And now we know much, much better, right, that you can absolutely get a great education online. So yeah, that was my first introduction into associations. And once I finished my first degree, or I guess second degree in economics, I thought, all right, this has been a great 10-year run, but I kind of want to know what other organizations do, right? I want to know what's out there in the world, so to speak. I've been in my little association bubble for 10 years, but I was thinking, what else is there to do? And so I went and worked at an audit firm, and I worked for a public transportation contractor for a little while as a controller, and, you know, working with unions, and just got a different experience. And then from there, I transferred, I went into a space that I've been at for the last 10, 15 years, which is the sort of nonprofit policy, political kind of arena. And so I worked at an organization that trained and elected LGBTQ candidates for public office. And then I went to work at the Center for American Progress, which is sort of the biggest think tank, progressive think tank in the country. And then I went to the American Immigration Lawyers Association, where I felt like at that point I kind of came back home to the association world. I went out, you know, went out to college and went out and went out into the world and came back home. Like, this is actually my calling.
Yep.
And
what kind of things did you learn in that experience and that time away that that you brought back that were helpful?
You know, I think I realized that I probably could never fully appreciate or even be my best working at in a place that didn't have some sort of value set or social responsibility aspect to their work. I wasn't really good at just driving towards the bottom line. I just wasn't as good at that. I have a huge respect for folks who are in the for-profit world and in many ways keep our economy going and so forth. But for me, I just found so much more value and a connection in organizations that were obviously businesses, but businesses that had that purpose and that mission attached to it that reflected my own personal value set. And going off into that part of that, doing that kind of work, sort of made that really, really clear for me. And it's also what made me really interested in ASLA. When I came across that job or this job, it's like they get it. They really get it.
Yep. Cool. I want to get back to jumping into ASLA, but you mentioned your second degree in economics. How many degrees and what were they all in? That sounds like you spent a lot of time going to school.
I did. I don't know. The students might not want to hear all this though.
Hey, they love school.
I have an economics degree, an accounting degree, and then I went back and got my MBA.
Okay.
And learning and continuous learning, ongoing education is huge for me. Every year I try to do some sort of programming at a different university just to sort of keep the skills sort of polished up.
Right.
Yep. So I've done programs at Duke and Harvard, and I think recently I did one at Berkeley on artificial intelligence. Totally geeking out on artificial intelligence.
Yeah. Is there like their master certificate type programs or?
Yeah.
There's some good stuff out there.
Really good stuff.
Yeah, it's important to continue to improve and learn and I think stay current, even, you know, artificial intelligence, obviously that's very important and something that could become very important to landscape architecture in the future.
That's right. That's a whole other podcast that we can have here.
Yep. Fantastic. The Future of the Professions. Have you read that book?
I have not read that one. I have a different one on my shelf. Everyone that I've talked to, several members of my board and XCOM have told me that that book is a must read. But I've read similar ones to it. And I have one book that I'm looking at right now on my bookshelf that I would encourage you and others to read, particularly this group of emerging professionals and students. It's called New Power.
New Power.
And it's all about what ASLA and every other association is kind of going through right now, which is this shift in the demographics of the organization. And how do you sort of provide programs and services and benefits for a group of members who have very, very different needs, who want different things out of their membership, out of their experience. There's a group who wants, who really, really enjoys that in-person networking event. And then there are others who are like, yeah, that's fine, but I'd rather, it's a little expensive for me. I'm not really sure I get what I need out of it. I'd rather participate or engage in other ways. Micro learning, online learning, again, getting back to what we were talking about earlier. And so the challenge is figuring out how to create an organization that's nimble enough and responsive to all of those different needs within the membership, while also maintaining community and keeping us all connected and focused on our mission. That's a really big challenge, but it's also super exciting to me. Like, nothing gets me going more than figuring out that Rubik's Cube.
Right. Yeah, get the right spots. Do you find that those changes are more generational or just personality?
So it's interesting because in the book, when I first started reading it, I thought, you know, we're all told that it's more generational. We're all told that there's this huge difference between Gen X, Gen Y, millennials, and et cetera, et cetera. And as I read the book, so I came into the book thinking that that would be what this book was going to be about. But the truth of the matter is, it's not that cut and dry. It's not that simple. Because I remember being the 20-year-old who wanted some of the same things that I hear millennials say that they want now, right? And so I think that, you know, we just sort of, as our experiences change and we are, you know, we maybe get more senior in our positions, we may, maybe sometimes we kind of forget. You know, it's like the rap music or the music that, you know, our parents hated that we listened to, we loved, and now we hear music that our kids listen to and we're like, that's not music, that's garbage. It's the same sort of cycle we're in. So I mean the biggest takeaway is that we're not that different. I think the opportunity is that people are realizing is that we can all kind of coexist together. It's just that what we can't do is have one type of programming that we try to present or offer everyone.
Right. Yep. That's great.
We're in the Netflix world now.
Absolutely. Yep. Everything. So, do you want to, I don't want to pry, but family life, with, you know, how was kids, family, what's going on there?
Well, you know, if you take a second, really quiet in here right now. It's because my two kids are at daycare.
Okay.
So I have two kids. I have a 3-year-old girl, Drew, and I have a 5-month-old as of yesterday, son, Aiden.
Wow.
Yeah.
Get your hands full.
We do. My husband and I definitely absolutely have our hands full. We are perpetually tired.
I can imagine. I remember those days.
Yes. Always tired. But I mean, it's fantastic. It's also connecting back to the point we were talking about earlier about what sort of you know, drives me to this kind of work. I mean, you know, how, I mean, it makes it really easy when you can, when you look at the two of them and you're like, yep, I have more work to do to make sure that you guys are set up right and that your world is better than what it could be if we don't pay attention to some of these things.
Yep, absolutely. It changes your mindset. You're fighting for more than yourself.
Yes. Fighting for more than myself, and it has a way of making you incredibly patient.
That's good, because some of these landscape architects are rambunctious. So,
you know, I wish I were able to experience that in a month or so, right? I mean, that's it's one of the biggest downsides, I have to say. Actually, it's the only downside of starting this job right now is, you know, I just haven't been able to see or, you know, meet members. That is just the biggest, that and the staff, and just that is the biggest downside of this thing. It's just not being able to meet people and hear them and experience their rambunctiousness and tell me all your wild and crazy ideas. And I mean, I so miss that. I mean, it's going to, if we're able to be together in Nashville, it's going to be I'm just going to jump off the plane.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's interesting, this time frame, because the annual meeting is such a important part of ASLA. You know, it's that annual reunion. We get to see people that we often only get to see once a year, and the energy and the excitement. Yeah, so that would have been a great way to leap into this, and now you're going to be, 14 months in or something before you get to experience it. So you'll be an old pro before you even get your initiation, really.
Definitely old. We'll see about the pro.
All right. And even going to your staff, obviously, the NDC, the office isn't open. I guess some people are going in occasionally. Are you meeting with staff via Zoom and getting to know people that way?
Yeah.
How's that working?
You know, the staff is incredible. And they've been really, really great. We have been meeting over Zoom. It's one of those things where it is kind of second nature at this point. I mean, we're all doing it. And we're getting pretty good at it. And we're just making the best of it. Same with the board. I've been having conversations with board members and partner organizations, and we're just doing the best we can with this thing. I mean, I have seen a couple, as I said, I've seen a couple of people in person, social distance, obviously with masks and so forth, but it's a handful.
So speaking of staff, and you talked about kind of your experience getting to association world and some of your other stuff, associations, I think, tend to draw those who are passionate about the nonprofit work and social justice. I believe that ASLA staff is particularly passionate about landscape architecture and what we do. I mean, how many ASLA staff have become honorary ASLA members because they're so involved? Are you seeing that? Does that correlate with, compared to other organizations, not to compare directly, but do you find that they love ASLA and they're willing to go the extra mile?
It's one of the each one of the meetings I have with them, I ask, or individual meetings, I should say, I start off by saying, sort of what brought you to ASLA and what keeps you here? What makes you stay? Because I think that's critical because, we live in Washington, D.C., and there are just a number of organizations and places where people could have other opportunities. And the fact that so many of our team has chosen to work at ASLA and continue to work at ASLA and push through some of the most difficult times, it is a testament to the mission and the values of the organization. I mean, and so it is more profound here than some of the other organizations I've worked. And I think it's because of that connection to the mission and the sort of the connection to policy areas and issues that people really, really care about. And they're not a lot of organizations or professions where you have that sort of like multiple connection, multiple points of connection to policy areas to a specific profession, right? I mean, the outcomes and the impact of landscape architects on, I mean, on climate change and social justice and creating equitable spaces for people, and health care. I mean, just the times we're living in right now, and you think about the number of issues and challenges that we face, you can almost, for most of them, you can connect the a different outcome to the work of a landscape architect. If you hire a landscape architect to do this, you can help X, Y, Z, right? And that is huge. And there's just not a whole lot of professions where you can sort of make that direct connection on that many levels. I came from the immigration attorneys, my last job, and they are fighting the good fight and doing yeoman's work. But, you know, there's like one or two connections. I mean, it is one policy connection, essentially, right? Whereas landscape architects, I mean, it's an abundance. I mean, if you can be passionate about climate and completely have a direct line to landscape architects and so forth. And so I think that completely translates to why the staff is so passionate and engaged in our work and committed to our members.
It's fantastic.
It really is. It's a great job to come into, right? The pandemic has its challenges and it's presented its challenges, and I don't, you know, like we just talked about, but, you know, having an organization and a team of volunteers and members who are that excited and passionate about the work, in spite of all of what we're going through as a country right now, is pretty amazing.
Yeah, it's fantastic. It's good for the membership to have that kind of passionate people on their side, you know, fighting for them every day. And you can go to them when you need stuff and they're fighting for you. And I think, you know, obviously one big thing is making sure that everyone's aware of the things that the staff are doing, which I'm sure is something you'll be working on, and we'll get into that. Mm-hmm. Let me hop into how you first found out about the ASLA job and what kind of made it jump out at you and made you pursue it.
So I first, gosh, I mean, it sounds like forever ago at this point. I mean, I think I saw the job on a posting. A job posting. And, you know, I've been having the sort of starting to get the itch, so to speak, for something new. And I've kind of been on this, I don't know, journey towards the chief executive role, probably for a decade at this point. And, but I was really clear that, you know, it wasn't only about being a chief executive officer. It's about leading an organization and a mission that I believed in. And so, you know, the students who listen to this will soon know what I'm talking about when recruiters come knocking. and others who are listening will know, like, you know, once a recruiter gets your email address, I mean, they just keep coming and coming and coming. And so I would delete, like, you know, stuff all the time, like, not interested, not for me. Sounds great. No, thanks. This one came across and I thought, huh. And it was right at the beginning of the whole pandemic stuff, right? Where it was like, oh, what's this COVID and what's going on? It was probably late February, I would say, when I first saw the posting. And I read like the beginning of a job description. And I thought, this sounds really interesting. But I put it down and, you know, trying to sort of make my way through the pandemic stuff initially.
Yep.
And I was working one day and I thought, oh my God, what about that job? Yeah, 2 weeks had passed and I thought, oh gosh, the window is passed and they've probably already gone through their process. And so I picked it up and I reached out, and when I really sat down and read the prospectus and sort of started to understand what the organization was looking for in its next leader. And then I started to sort of poke around on the website and really kind of start to try to understand who the people were, like what is the culture? What are the values of this community? Mm-hmm. And I couldn't put my finger on it initially. I was like, but I kept being drawn back to the work. I kept being drawn back to it. I'm like, what is, it's not, I mean, I love landscape architect, sure, but I don't, I don't know why I'm being pulled back to it in this sort of weird way, or interesting way. And then I realized, oh, it's because they understand purpose, right? They understand that it is the profession that they do that's important, but it's important because it has this broader impact. And so I decided this is absolutely something I'm interested in pursuing. And where the organization was also kind of familiar. I thought this sort of transition that they're going through and that they're clearly articulating that they want to move forward in a different direction to solve some of these challenges that every other association, as I said, is going through. I thought this could be fun. This could be really fun, and it could be a really nice match, right, between sort of my background and what they are looking for, and it will sort of feed my soul at the same time.
Yep.
And, you know, fast forward through the process, I got through the first few, you know, sort of hurdles. And I remember when I first talked to Greg Miller, who was the head of the search, and was when I talked to him, it was, you know, it was a pretty standard conversation. He was calling all of us to invite us or welcome us to the process. But I talked to him for maybe 30 minutes, and I got off the phone and I was like, I felt like I just talked to like my spiritual advisor. Like, it felt like, it just felt so good. And I was like, this is weird. I don't get it, but I need to be with these people. There's something here.
Yep.
And even now I'm fumbling trying to explain it, because it really was just sort of this gut or this sense that we are supposed to be working together, and they're going to get me and I get them. And there's something special about that. And when you sort of have that feeling, you know, that first date where you're like, ooh, there's something special here. Or like that first, you see a person across the room and you're like, yeah, huh. And then that ends up being your spouse. Like that sort of thing, that sort of feeling is what I was experiencing over and over again as I went through the process. And so it was still good to me.
Go back to the pastor analogy. You got your calling. your Damascus moment.
Your dad's going to be so proud.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Landscape architects lead the planning, design, and stewardship of healthy, equitable, safe, and resilient environments. The mission of the American Society of Landscape Architects is to advance landscape architecture through advocacy, communication, education, and fellowship. Representing more than 15,000 members, ASLA is the collective voice of the profession. Membership matters. Find out more and join today at ASLA.org.
Oh, that's fantastic. Before you dove into this, you mentioned landscape architecture. You love landscape architecture. What was your awareness or knowledge of landscape architecture?
I'm learning that it was not what I thought it was, but that it was limited. So one of the first things, I'll share this story with you too. In the third round of my interview process, I asked the search committee, I said, you know, because I'm not a landscape architect, but I want to understand, you know, and be able, you know, should this move forward, I want to be able to really understand what landscape architects do. And I want to understand the history of the work. And I want to, you know, I want to be able to really sort of meet the needs of the profession, if I'm chosen to lead it. And so I asked them each to give me a book to read. And so I have this amazing sort of library now of books that they all sort of listed out for me to read. One of the first books I read was Discovering the Vernacular Landscape. And I'm going to have to read the book again, because it is so, I mean, it's just dense with information. It gives really, really good history and perspective. But the one thing that I read that really stood out to me, to answer your question of what I thought landscape architecture was, this sort of passage in the book sort of addressed it. I mean, it basically said that, you know, we are sort of trained to think about the built environment to see the built environment or the natural environment even through the lens of the architect. primarily, or the engineer primarily, right? So we think about a bridge and how it functions. But this book talks about there's the bridge and the functionality of the bridge, but there's also the placement of the bridge and all the things around the bridge and the structures that have to be in place for the bridge in case water rises. I mean, all of the other things, the form and function of the bridge that have to go, that went into that decision and placement and all of those things into why that bridge is there. It's much more dynamic than just the bridge itself or the function of the bridge itself. Right. And I mean, I read that and I thought, oh my God. And so then so then I'm like walking on my path in my neighborhood and so forth. I'm just seeing stuff in a completely different way, right?
Yeah.
And so, and that's also been the fun part of this journey. And I know it's going to continue, for years to come. It's just sort of learning all the different ways that landscape architects show up in our environment, and their work shows up in ways that we don't even see or recognize. And we have to do a better job of telling that story. Because I think even just my sort of small friendship network, the more I talk about it and sort of, they're like, oh my God, you're totally geeking out over this landscape architect. Like, yeah, like think about it, like look around, like, you know? And it's exciting stuff. And when people really understand the impact of the profession on their communities, I think that the appreciation and value is just going to just be mind blowing for people.
Right. Yeah. I think every person is affected every day somehow by landscape architecture, whether they know it or not. Most of them don't. Ooh. So it's, SLA's job, I guess, to get that message out about what it is along with the partner organizations. How does that, since, you mentioned earlier, the policy stuff is so broad, it may affect in so many different ways, and landscape architecture itself, the way people practice, so broad. Mm-hmm. How does that make your job challenging to convey that, like, who are we, what do, when it's so vast?
Well, I think, the one thing that, that's a really good question. I think, I don't know, I mean, to me, it just doesn't, it's not scary, right? It's more exciting. I think, so there are a lot of things that landscape architects do. But there can be a really simple way of explaining it. It doesn't have to be as, technical sometimes, depending on the audience that we're trying to influence. We can talk about it in terms of those policy areas. Like, so for example, one of the things, if you think about, for instance, I think it was Richmond, Virginia, where the monuments were coming down in the city center. If you talk about how that community might reimagine that space, how they might bring in people from different parts of that community and that town together to think about what community or public engagement means to them. And what they want that public space to provide to them. And you get people talking about what they want their day-to-day lives to look like and what's important to them. And you spend the bulk of the time talking about that. And then at the end, you swoop in and say, and you know who can do that for you? Not your politician, right? It's not the other person that you think. It's the landscape architect, right? Right. In order to actually make that happen, you need a landscape architect.
Yeah.
So to me, like just that one example, is something that is not very difficult to do. We have to do more of it, I think. But you can do that. You can take any issue or any challenge, all those various, policies or areas of focus of our work. And you can carve out a story that is personal to people, that people can connect with, and suddenly it's actually not that difficult. It's actually, and people go, oh, okay, I get it. I understand now.
Start with why, end with who.
There you go. I mean, it's so true. Have you read that book, Start With Why?
Yeah.
It's a good one. It's on my shelf.
Perfect. So in the process of going through the hiring process, all the phases, all the interviews, how did you express why you believed you were the person for the job?
Mm. I don't know if you should ask me that or that's it.
Put you back on the spot. Wait, I thought I was already hired.
Exactly. How did I express that I'm the person for the job? You know, I think I was a couple things. I said to them, I really, really want this job. I mean, number one, you have to want the job, right? Because this position it's not going to be easy. The organization has a number of kind of decisions that it has to make about where it wants to go. There are many directions that we could go in. And so in order to sit in this job, you have to really, really want to do this. You got to wake up every day excited to do this work. And so one of the things I said to them is that, like, you have that commitment from me. Like, I want to do this work, right? This isn't, I had a great job before, but I want this job, right? I want to do this. Everything that you're saying that you need done, I want to help you do that, right? So I was comfortable with the sort of responsibility and authority, all of that. I was like, I'm good. And they kept asking me, do you have any concerns? I'm like, no, right? there are a lot of things that I have to figure out, but none of it is sort of like, you know, makes me pause at wanting to do this. So that was number one, is I wanted to do it. The second thing is I think that I do sort of bring this interesting mix of skill set and background that kind of uniquely in many ways just aligns really nicely to what they said they wanted. So, and it wasn't just the search committee or the executive committee. My understanding is that they reached out and asked the community, what do you want in this position? And the more they talked about it, and, you know, pieces would come out here and there and be highlighted here and there, but it was all fairly consistent in their sort of hopes for the person who was going to be in this position. And, you know, as humble as I was in the process, I kept coming back to, yeah, that's actually me. This sort of mix of social responsibility and passion about the issues and being able to be a small p political, you know, in a sense of influencing and lobbying for the profession and that kind of thing. Having a number of business problems to solve for, like fees, that sort of data wonky, the econ guy part of me. Mm-hmm. There's that. And then my sort of personality and wanting to sort of like work with people and interested in hearing from the person who feels like they don't get enough out of their ASLA membership. And tell me why, right? You know, so the desire and the curiosity to solve these problems or these challenges and meet them head on, all of that, I mean, I told them, like, that's what I do. That's what excites me to do it. And so, I mean, that was really, really what I told them. Like, I want the job. I think I'm a good fit. Based on what you're telling me, not based on what I'm telling you.
Right.
And I'm going to have fun doing it.
Awesome. That's a good answer. It worked.
It worked, I think. Although, you know, you asked me the question, so I mean, I have to go back and check some things out here. I think I got this out.
Yeah. They let you in the office a couple times, so you must have. Yeah.
Well, maybe I took the blue pill and I should have taken the red one.
Oh no, now we're getting deep.
I told you I was a numbers geek.
So now that you're settled in after your you know, 4 weeks or so, and you've got it all figured out, what do you see as the biggest challenges? What are you going to tackle first?
Ooh. Well, those are two.
Yeah, that's true. Those are two different questions, aren't they?
Yeah. But, you know, that was my first instinct instinctive responses, as they're two different questions. But then in the 2 seconds that I had to think about it, I thought, actually, they're not. And the reason why they aren't is because our biggest challenge is we don't necessarily have a strategy right now. And what I mean by that is we have a lot of great ideas. We have a strong sense of purpose, which I think will help us create a clear vision of where we want to be in 5, 7, 10 years. But we haven't done the so we have the why, right? But we don't have the pieces of the why. We don't have the strategy to get us to the vision that we pretty much, I feel like, at least so far, most people imagine for us. But we got to articulate that vision out in writing so that people can understand it. So that, to your point, it makes it much easier to tell that story. Everybody understands what ASLA is and where we're going. That's a vision that we have to sort of tease out as a community. And then the next part is coming up with the strategy, because there are a number of channels that we could pursue in order to see that vision through, but we can't do all of them. We certainly can't do all of them at the same time. And so we have to sort of prioritize and be strategic about resource allocation and what our sweet spot is as an organization versus what we're letting some other organization do or take the lead with. All of that work has to happen first and next. So that's my first year, pretty much, is figuring out that, because, you know, it sounds like an easy thing, but it actually, if you do it right, it's actually a very methodic and intentional process that the organization has to go through. And that's what we're going to spend the bulk of 2021 doing. I see 2021 as a year of sort of recovery and sustainability, where we just sort of get our balance.
I think that's everybody.
Right. And while we're sort of doing that, we're also figuring out what the future is for the organization. And
how will that strategic map be informed? The trustees, the chapter leadership, full membership, you know, how will you inform where we're going?
So we're going to start with full membership. So it's I got a few tools in my toolkit. But one is, you know, we're going to do focus groups of members, mm-hmm. diverse groups of members.
Great.
We're going to do, surveys, like, and not, love Survey Monkey, but we're actually going to do, scientific, you know, real, you know, surveys.
Yep.
Of the whole membership,
okay.
Where I can project out what I think a representative sample of the membership is and make decisions based on that. And as a marketing guy, you know exactly what I'm talking about.
Yep, I'm with you.
I may have a little talk to you.
All right. Anything I can do.
But yeah, no. So we're gonna do some real surveys where I can get some confidence on what the results say, and that those results reflect what the membership wants. Focus groups, because the point is that the membership feels like they have had a say in this thing,
right?
Because it is their organization. And then you couple that with some smaller group conversations with the board of trustees and the chapter leadership. And the executive committee, obviously, and then you have to bring all of those pieces together, which is why it takes so long, right? Because there's going to be a lot of stuff that comes up, which is what I want, right? I cannot wait for the friendly disagreement that's going to happen, right? Because then you get to clarity. One of the things that I've learned over the years and that I've sort of injected in the last organization that I was at is this philosophy around disagree and commit. What it means is everybody gets to say, right? We're all in this together. Everybody's at the table. You get to say and offer your thoughts and opinions. But once we get to the point where we're kind of deciding that this is the direction that we're going, we have a consensus, or we have at least a general sense, general agreement that this is the direction we're going, and these are the pillars, or these are the mechanisms or pillars, if you will, that we've agreed that we're going to pursue. Once we sort of leave the room, so to speak, or we all go off and talk about it, we're committed to it.
Right.
And so we're all on board.
Yep.
But in order to do that, it's going to be a little messy. Right.
Yep.
And that, to me, that's where the fun is. You get just for example, if you get two people in a room that completely disagree, that care about the issue equally as passionately, but have a different approach. And if you can get those two people in the room to have a respectful and engaging, but, you know, passionate conversation and leave the room with the general agreement that this is what we're going to do, hey, that's magic.
Yep. That's powerful. And that's when it gets done.
Okay. Because then people can say, yeah, I tried, or I was in the conversation, and, you know, ultimately I think we went the right direction. I didn't agree at first, but, you know, after hearing everyone's opinions, I can get behind that, right? That's all you need.
Perfect.
So that's the first year. So get ready.
That sounds fantastic. I think going to the full membership and getting this scientific data, throwing that in with your economic mind and numbers, I think we're going to get somewhere, and that sounds great. I think ASLA is doing some things right. What are those kind of things where you're like, oh, that's clicking well. I don't think I need to tweak that at all right now. Anything like that?
Well, I got to tell you, one thing that I think that we're doing really, really well is the recent thing I should say we're doing well is the student membership. The fact that the student membership is now free, I came in and thought, whew, thank God, right? Because that was something that I changed in my last organization. And so I was like, that's fantastic. Now that it's free, we got to figure out how to actually provide services and benefits and make it something that the students really, really value and look towards and utilize. But the fact that that's free, I was like, okay, great. I don't have to deal with that. That's a fight I don't have to have. The annual conference moving to virtual conference, the team is like working really, really diligently and hard to make sure that that happens. And the fact that we were able to quickly decide that we were going to go from in-person to virtual, and for it to be as far along as it is now in its development, was also a thing that I came in and thought, oh, thank God. and the reason that, obviously for the reason of the program itself, but also for the future, right? The fact that we were able to pivot to a virtual creates an opportunity for us to talk about what the future looks like for the conference.
Right.
And if it is in person, or if it is in person and virtual, or a hybrid, or maybe it's, we do more than one conference is an idea that I've thrown out. And it meets different needs to different demographics and groups of the membership, right? We can have a conference that does, or conferences that do more than one thing. So I don't feel like, I guess to really simply answer your question, the thing that's really working is there's no shortage of ideas or interest in thinking about new ways of doing things. Whereas, I could have walked into an organization that says, this is the way we've always done it. We need you to just kind of keep, you know, make sure that we get through 2020, but then just sort of, maintain status quo. That would have been hard.
Yeah, that would have been a whole different scenario for you.
Whole other kettle of fish, as my Irish friend says.
So let's look, let's say 5 years down the road.
Mm-hmm.
How will you measure if you've been successful or not?
Oh, that's a good question. I thought you might ask me that question. and so I'll tell you this. The another thing the search committee asked me was, you know, to do this sort of first year roadmap and you know, what does the first year look like and so forth. And while doing that, I thought about this question, you know, not just after the first year, but like what after 5 years does the organization look like and how we've been successful. And I think the answer is, I'll read this to you because this is the purpose that I wrote for myself coming into the job. And it is, my purpose and commitment to ASLA and its members is to strategically integrate ALA's people, resources, and outcomes to meet the needs of landscape architect professionals and responsibly use our community's strength in numbers to advocate for social responsibility and actions that make the world a more sustainable, equitable, and beautiful place. So if I've done that, in 5 years, we will have been successful.
That's excellent.
There's a lot of stuff that has to happen that plugs into that.
Right.
You know what I mean? But that, that is what I will always come back to sort of measure how are we doing, and to find gaps in where we need to do better.
Yep. I think that is definitely a mission and vision that we can all get behind and support and do what we can to support you to get there, because if we're doing that, we're all doing something good. I like that.
I think so too.
Well, fantastic. If you can believe it, we've been talking almost an hour already. So, yeah.
I had to ask you one question.
Oh, uh-oh. Okay. Hold on. I'm the interviewer. let's see. I'm just going to move on.
Yep.
So I want to give you one last little kind of, the floor is yours to offer up any thoughts, ideas, encouragement, rah-rah speech, whatever you got for the students, emerging professionals you want to share to close out, and we can wrap up shortly after.
Thank you. Rah-rah. I think that says it all, right? No, I think that, you know, if I were to offer up anything is just an acknowledgement of how hard this year has been for all of us, but particularly for students and emerging professionals. I mean, this is an incredibly hard and difficult time to be a student and to try to become a professional. A new professional coming out of school, just starting off. It is an incredibly difficult time. And so my words of encouragement are, please hang in there. We will get through this. If you need anything from anyone from ASLA at the national office, reach out. We will do everything we can to help you. But hang in there. I mean, you know, it reminds me of a quote that was circulating in the LGBTQ space for back in like 2012 when I was working there. And this congressman, Joel Burns, did this video called It Gets Better. And the whole, I mean, it was at the moment where bullying was just, it was just awful. And I mean, it still remains a problem, but I mean, it was just absolutely terrible where people just weren't acknowledging as a thing. And just the simple sentiment of it gets better, and knowing that there are people out there who are, thinking about you and doing what they can to make things better, to create an organization now at ASLA that will be there for you throughout your career. Professors who are going to make sure that you get the education that you need and that you get through this, because they believe it will get better. So yeah, I just say hang in there. We'll be there for you. And I'm excited to meet you. You know, once we get on the other side of this and we can actually see each other, I can't wait for it. I'm looking forward to you all running this organization and helping me, get things done and move the organization forward, your organization forward. It's yours.
All right. That was great. Thank you so much, Tori. It's good to know we're in good hands. Feel confident, excited about the things you're bringing to the table. And I'm sure our listeners also look forward to helping you get things done.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of Ask LA. Be sure to subscribe to the Ask LA podcast on iTunes, Google, or your podcast service of choice to catch every episode. For more information about the great work of the American Society of Landscape Architects, check out ASLA.org.